pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, October 28th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, Dwayne, how was your soccer weekend?
It was pretty good. Beyond watching, I actually told you this morning, I only watched three games this week, but then I realized when I did the math, it was actually closer to five. But nonetheless, more importantly, Kevin, I came out of retirement in my own fledgling playing career after 18 months off. And
you were part of that tournament. Okay, so Toronto FC had a supporters group tournament this weekend, and Dwayne, I guess you played in U Sector's victory.
I played with U Sector this weekend. Yes. I can't move. So that's fine.
I was walking around this morning and my knee hurts for some reason. I didn't do anything. I climbed stairs yesterday and I was like, yeah, I old. How can I not even imagine playing?
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, it's all these muscles, because when you're in goal, you're going left, right, left, right, left, right. So it's all these inner thigh muscles that don't exist for any other reason than that. yeah, fun times.
I know those muscles very well. That's my claim to fame was in goal. The only time I played attacker, I still had my goalkeeper reflexes, and I lasted about a minute, and then I did a handball in the other team's territory, got a red card, and there was my playing career.
There you go. Not much of a career for me, but I do enjoy getting out there, so I'm looking to do it for another year. But enough of me. Yeah, we should talk about the pros.
My talking career has just started, though, and we're going to talk about soccer today. Of course, on Soccer Today, NWSL Final, the Canadian Premier League Final as well. While it's the NWSL Championship, the Canadian Premier League Final, we'll talk a little bit about the Premier League as well later on the show. To free up tomorrow for the playoffs, MLS playoffs preview tomorrow and Wednesday here on the show this week. Dwayne, and of course, we'll talk more about the Canadian Premier League Final on the Two Solitude Soccer podcast, recording in the next couple of days, or probably tomorrow, and you'll find it at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. But Dwayne, let's start with the NWSL Final, the North Carolina Courage versus the Chicago Red Star. This game was never in doubt for North Carolina.
No, 4 minutes in, and then it was a cruise. This, for those that don't know the history of the North Carolina Courage, they used to be the Western New York Flash, which was a team that played in Western New York. They didn't really have a home ever. They played in Buffalo for a while. They played in Rochester for a while. They kind of were nomadic, and then they eventually moved to North Carolina and became a dominant force in this league. This is the fourth year in a row that they've been in the final, is either the Flash or the Courage. This is the second year in a row that they've won, and the third and four that they've won. So this is absolutely the predominant NWSL program right now. You know, the Thorns get a lot of the attention, Portland Thorns, but they have not, other than the one title, they did what, you know, they're a successful team, but they haven't done what the Courage have done on the field. And the Courage also get good crowds and are very well supported as well. But
it's a good victory for them. Like, let's not kid ourselves. The amount of resources put in the North Carolina Courage and even the USL team of North Carolina with the same umbrella, the ownership of Steve Malik, the amount of resources put into that program compared to the rest of the league, it's not even close. And it's not about the stars. This team, yes, you have great players like Stephanie LeBay in goal, Canadian Women's National Team goalkeeper, also goalkeeper of the North Carolina Courage, Crystal Dunn, and you have Samantha Mewis, that are great players on their own right, but together they make a good team. And of course, Thorns, you have Sinclair, and Megan Rapinoe with the Reigns lost in the semifinal a week ago versus the North Carolina Courage in a 1-0 win, I believe, with the Courage. But it's not about the glitz and the glamour. North Carolina Courage has a football culture, and the way they treat those games is at a higher level to me than pretty much the rest of the NWSL.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of the names. They're bigger names on that roster, and they certainly have some star power there. But they're known for being a, you know, 1 through 22 kind of team. That they have the best of, and this is kind of the key to the NWSL in many ways. It's, you know, to use a CFL analogy, if you can believe this, they always say in the CFL, the team with the best Canadians wins. I think in the NWSL, it's similar. The team with the best non-internationals, like your U.S. internationals or your allocated players, they call them the Canadian players, are the ones that then tend to be the best teams in the league. And I think that North Carolina is undeniably has the best overall talent on that roster from top to bottom. And that speaks to, as you say, the amount of resources they put into it, because that is the way that you can get a little edge up. I mean, Jonathan Tannewell had a very interesting point and a sort of observation he made on Twitter after this, where you have this very successful USL team, very successful NWSL team existing in this market, but yet MLS doesn't even seem remotely interested in it. They're instead looking at the down the road for
Carolina Panthers in Charlotte. And not the team and rally like Steve Malik's organization, which also brings a conversation of which is better, a sport organization joining MLS or a soccer organization joining MLS with experience of drawing soccer crowds, which for me has more correlation to a successful MLS campaign. But then you have Atlanta changing the paradigm on that too. So I don't know. It is an issue that I can see both happen, and it's maybe a topic for down the road in the off season for sure. How do you compare Charlotte to Rally when both can have a claim to having a soccer hotbed in North Carolina? But again, congratulations to the North Carolina Courage, Stephanie LeBay, goalkeeper of the Canadian Women's National Team, with the clean sheet, Dwayne, and the championship. I was happy for Stephanie. She has been through a lot over the last 2 years with a few legal battles back in her Foothills days, more than a year from ago. So now it is a good time for the Courage.
No, for sure. You know, well-deserved, as I said. This is the best team, I think, in this league at the top end. And it was a good weekend for the NWSL in general, Kevin. I mean, the announcement that Louisville is going to come in for 2021. Rumors started flying around that Sacramento is interested in bringing a team in next season. They just have to sort of dot the I's and cross the T's there, so to speak. And they'll be in there, which is a little shorter of a run-up for that than their MLS franchise. We're also hearing talks of perhaps Cincinnati wanting in, tied into their MLS team. And this is, you know, a debate within women's soccer circles, whether MLS involvement is good or bad. I think it generally, if the investment's there, if they're putting the top people behind it in their organization, then it can't be anything but good. And it continues to expand that league and that foothill in it. This is, you know, like the Canadian Premier League, we talked about up the top, that one of the weaknesses of the NWSL is just how small it is. So the bigger you can get that, the bigger footprint you can have it, the more opportunity you're providing to more players, the better it's going to be for the women's game, in particular the women's game in the United States, where the rich just get richer.
Yeah. And we're not going to talk necessarily a lot about results of the U-17 World Cup, but when you look at the men's U-17 World Cup results, yes, both Canada and the U.S. lost. The U.S. lost to Senegal 4-1, and Canada lost 4-1 also, I believe, against Brazil. If it's not for nothing, I don't have the score right in front of me.
4-1,
yeah. Yeah, so 2-4-1.
Canada legal.
Yeah, so there you go. Just for honor. Good job, boys. But when you look at the USSF model and the pay-to-play and all that, and you see the non-results for decades now in the U.S. youth program, it is interesting, and again, it's another great topic for the offseason in Major League Soccer. Just to finish on the NWSL final, Dwayne, before we move on to the Canadian Premier League final, I want to read a couple of excerpts from Mitchell Thurnham's article on Pro Soccer USA, talking about the Amanda Duffy State of the League that happened Saturday. Amanda Duffy is the commissioner of the NWSL, and it happened just the day before the final in Cary, North Carolina. When this season started in April, the NWSL was coming off an unexpected breakup with the A&E network. The league was without a home on the linear television. It didn't have a communications director, and it found itself scrambling so it could make the most out of a World Cup year, an opportunity to capture more women's soccer fans. As the season went on, the NWSL was able to accomplish that. It struck a television deal with ESPN, and I would add, TSN by the bank here. It landed a major sponsorship with beer giant Budweiser, and the league saw a 22% increase in attendance, according to Soccer Stadium Digest. The league announced earlier this week that a 10th team in Louisville, Kentucky, will join as an expansion side in 2021. As the season went on, in 2021. So, and more cities have been rumored to join as early as 2020. Indeed, while it was a transition year for the NWSL, it could also be considered as a success, and Duffy is optimistic about where the league is heading. Do you think, Dwayne, in a World Cup year, that the NWSL turned that corner this year?
Well, turn the corner is always a very difficult thing to quantify. I think certainly we did see them continue to take advantage of another U.S. World Championship out of France this year. And certainly in the games that immediately followed that World Cup, you saw huge numbers. But that was to be expected. We've seen it in the past. The real question, the real sort of test will come next year, will come in not even necessarily next year, but especially the year after that. You have the women's game has uniquely the two years out of every four are in major international tournaments, and they come back-to-back years, and then you have sort of two feral years, and that's fallow years, not feral years. That's a completely different thing. Anyway, but nonetheless, they will have to break through that and to see what they can do to generate that support. But I think that you're seeing, more importantly, beyond the butts in the seats, which is important, but just as we'll talk about the Campiel in a minute, the butts in the seats are really a small factor compared to the hands in the wallets of the major sponsors. And you're starting to see Budweiser come on board. You're starting to see ESPN come on board. These are blue chip sort of names that are getting behind this league. And you're seeing other, because of that, you're seeing Louisville want to get in. You're seeing, you know, Cincinnati and Sacramento, as we said. And these are kind of smaller markets, but They're markets that have, you know, professional soccer teams in it, yeah, and have a culture around it.
In the sports conversation, there's many ways to look at a market. And I've been following minor league sports a bit more with minor league baseball, and also just to get my mind about some of the infrastructures of sports in North America. And you have hotbed of minor league sports. So cities that are not in the top five cities in the country, but that are big and draw big crowds, like Sacramento with the Republic in many levels, and other sports too, and like other smaller big cities of states that are not necessarily like the biggest city in Iowa. Des Moines.
Boise.
Des Moines.
Des Moines.
Boise, but Des Moines. Des Moines is a really hotbed for sports. Like, it draws 50,000 people for college wrestling meets. Like, there's things that we don't grasp and put our minds around. And sometimes you find yourself with the perfect situation. It doesn't matter where it is. And big cities of big states, like Des Moines, maybe we'll have a team eventually in Sacramento. Those are good examples.
And there is certain logic to the mid-sized cities, we'll call them, being a great place to put a league like the NWSL in, because then they get to be a bigger fish in a smaller pond. And that's not to be condescending to the league or to those cities, but it's true. I mean, you know, the CFL, again, second CFL reference, it doesn't really work in Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto. It works in Regina, because it works in Ottawa. These are mid-sized cities, and it's a big deal to those places to have them. Now, that's not to say you can't have success in the NWSL in a big city, just like you can't have success in any, you know, minor sport in a big city, just so long as you market and direct and find the right audience quickly. But it is a little more challenging, because you have to fight through a lot more noise. And with whether we want to, you know, a lot of people listen to this that are women's, you know, WOSO fans may want to wish the world was different. And I agree with them. I wish the world was different when it comes to this stuff too, but it isn't. And you have to think of these things, and these are the perfect places to get in. And when you start to get attention, you know, Portland being the prime example here, if you have more Portlands in this league, you know, Thorns we're talking about here, not Timbers, and you see those big crowds in there, it's not like Portland's a major city in the U.S., but in the women's soccer world, in the soccer world, it's among the biggest. And that in turn allows larger centers to look at and go, well, we want to create that too. And then suddenly the MLS for a second year, then suddenly if the Timbers crowds look like this and people in Los Angeles say, I want that to be the same as me, and then they build a stadium in downtown Los Angeles, and then suddenly you're hosting the Western Conference Final in 2 days. So that's kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And
it all plays into it.
It all plays into it, and the same could be done win the NWSL, maybe even a Canadian team in the future. We'll see if that ever happens.
Quickly before we segue, maybe this will allow us to segue. I was at the State of the League address for the Canadian Premier League on Friday after we did the show, and they spoke briefly on the women's game. And it does sound to me like the plan is to professionalize the clubs that exist already rather than to create one from scratch. So I'm not hearing any noise on NWSL expansion up here. What I am hearing is the Canadian Premier League working with League One Ontario to take those clubs to the next level. And that's a model which, you know, you can argue either way which is best, but
you know what,
it's the model they're following.
Hearing this makes me a bit hopeful as well for the Quebec side of the women's game, having already teams in the PLSQ women that could be compared similar to what exists in League One Ontario Women League. And maybe there'll be a partnership there at some point. Maybe Carmelina Moscato can meet with the Fédération de Soccer du Québec and get into an agreement to create that said women's league. Maybe I'm just seeing a bit too far down the road, but you know, let's look in the the mirror in the back. Let's look at that one.
Rearview mirror.
Exactly. It's a tough word for me on Monday morning. Canadian Premier League final. 1 for Forge, 0 for Cavalry. The score is not the important topic of discussion. Coming out of this game, the referee might be, yes, but also that call, that red card call on Tristan Borgers. And now, when you score a goal, when you miss a penalty, and when you get a red card in a game, it will now be known as a Borgers hat trick.
Will it be similar to the Gordie Howe hat trick, where it only ever happened once to Gordie Howe, but it still stuck with him forever?
It's stuck, and it's still called this to this day, the Borges hat trick. Let's go for it. But now, 1-0 Forge, Justin Borges. Unless the Canadian Soccer Disciplinary Committee, which already received an appeal already from Forge for that red card, decides to rescind it, Tristan Borges will miss the second leg of the Canadian final in Calgary at Spruce Meadows versus Cavalry. What do you think about the call? First of all, the whole play, the whole challenge was some sort of weird, and the way they tangled together, the way they fell down, it's like there was a wrestling move. It's like he was doing a judo throw at the same time. Borges did not like the fact that he was not in control of his own body, trying to kind of kick the Cavalry guy by flailing his knees, trying to kick the guy in a very miserable fashion. He failed miserably. But then still, the intent was there, and he was given the red card. Wielden was given a yellow on the play. Tristan Borges, after scoring the goal, gets the red card and misses the second game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Tristan Borges, who is arguably the best player talent-wise and certainly one of the highest ceilings in this league, and, you know, Taron Campbell and others will make an argument against that, and that's fine, but he's among them. To have him miss the second leg is unfortunate for the marketing of this league, for the just the spectacle of the second leg. And it was a very feisty game from start to finish. I mean, you mentioned, you know, they ended a 10-a-side. Now, Calgary's red card was for a handball in the box, which was more of an unfortunate incident than it was anything deliberate in my mind. But actually, the CSA came back and said that was the right call, because even if it wasn't on purpose, the intent didn't matter. It just, because it took away a direct goal scoring opportunity with a handball in the box. He was on the floor and his hand was out and it hit his hand.
Well, it might be true by the letter of the law, but in sports, we look at jurisprudence a bit more than the black and white writing of the law. And when do you see that call for a red card? Like, we've seen that damn play over the last few weeks in many different leagues across the world. It's always a yellow. It's always a yellow.
And the other unfortunate thing about Calgary, well, it was also the goal, Borges missed the penalty there, so they kind of got off the hook. But the double jeopardy behind it, right? Like, and they've changed the law to not double penalize a keeper that who does that. And
the double whammy,
yeah, it seems a bit much. But nonetheless, to get back to Borges, I mean, look, by the letter of the law, as you say, yeah, he probably deserves it. It was a bit like Beckham and Simeone back in 98, if you want to go way back, you know, kind of a weird little kick out that wasn't really that effective and was goaded into a bit. And I don't know what Borges is even thinking. If you've ever seen Tristan Borges in the flesh, he, you know, the size of a stick, so he's not going to hurt anyone.
Exactly. And Wielden is a little bit bigger, which started the whole damn thing, but he's like a hip check type of fighting for a 50-50 ball, which that was the game, right? Everyone was fighting for those balls. The competitiveness and the physicality of the duels was glaring to me. It was like jumping off the screen. I was like, wow, this is, they're fighting for it. So it happens when you play each other often in a 7-team league and both teams had success and both are considered to be the best in the league. You want to be the best. You got to beat the best. Woo. And they're fighting against each other for that reason.
Yeah. I think it was the 9th meeting, which is insane, but, it's like Celtic Rangers back in the days when they played all the cup finals. It's crazy. But, well, yeah, I mean, and anyone who watched that game and didn't come away with it going, yeah, we're a playoff culture, is deluding themselves, because they played, you know, a couple on the regular season. They're feisty games in the regular season too, but this, you know, was a little bit higher up. This was a little more intense. This had the big bright, and CBC, to their credit, and One Soccer, I guess they would have produced it, but to their credit, they went all out. And was on national broadcast, and it looked professional and looked the part. Nice crowd in Hamilton. But
the sideline was great. That's the fact that it was at a stadium that has proper camera settings and the right height for the broadcast view. So that made for a good broadcast as well. I could only imagine if this was at West Hill Stadium.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they lucked out too on that, because the second legs in Calgary, where they broadcast all the time, the CBC has like headquarters there basically, yeah, because they do show jumping for some mysterious reason. They show jumping a lot on CBC, so they're all set up for it.
It's a flushing metal, but one of those World of Sports Saturdays things on CBC. That's a throwback. Talk about old school sports. Yeah, that's amazing. CBC, right?
Oh, they show a lot of equestrian on CBC. It's my mom loves it. It's like the horsies are on, mom, and suddenly my mother watches sports with them. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Horses and divers.
World Cup sports, weird. Skiing, like things like this that we love to watch, that we talk on Five Rings podcast back tomorrow.
There you go. They're set up for the second. Like, no, it was a good game. I mean, I left that game to take its scoreboard for a second. And away from all the stuff behind it, I left it thinking that it's Calgary's to lose now. I mean, obviously they're losing the tie, but to only have allowed the one goal. I mean, and there's three crossbars in that game. Hamilton hit the crossbar three times,
yeah,
and had a penalty and missed a penalty. Like, they had every opportunity to take this game, to take it away and run with it, and didn't capitalize. And I think now, going back to Calgary, Hamilton's a bit more of a team that relies on speed and skill on the attack, and they're getting onto a surface that's bumpy and unpredictable, into weather that God only knows what you're going to get in November in Calgary, and it's going to be a tough thing for them to overcome and defend and hold on to. It reminds me a little bit of how that second CONCACAF League game, that where they, you know, they got the result in Hamilton, but it wasn't enough to hold on, and sure enough, the collapse in the second leg in Honduras.
It does look similar, and we'll see if it happens next week. Second leg, November 2nd, also on the CBC, and live from Spruce Meadows in Calgary. Let's take a quick break, and Dwayne and I will come back and talk a little bit about the Premier League and other topics in Europe that happened last weekend.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
Dwayne and I talk about Olympic sports on the Five Rings podcast, and also Canadian soccer on the Two Solitudes Soccer podcast that you can find on our Patreon page, where our premium podcasts are located, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. The Two Solitudes Soccer podcast is available for $2 a month. 4 shows, one every week. Dwayne, one thing that really caught my attention Saturday morning, looking at my television, is something that I actually predicted on Friday. For some reason, I kind of had a hunch. Looking at the schedule of Bayern Munich, looking at the Champions League schedule, looking at both combined and the strength of opponent in the coming few weeks for Bayern Munich, I was looking at this Union Berlin matchup as a great opportunity for Alphonso Davies to get the start, to get the nod, and to get 90 minutes into his 19-year-old legs. And it did happen. It did happen because 19-year-old is going to be his birthday in the next few weeks. So he's almost 19 in November. So that's how I remember, because you got turned 18 and then got transferred, right? Literally. So I'll always remember Alphonso Davies' his birthday somewhere around this time of year. He got 90 minutes in a 2-1 victory at home for Bayern Munich versus Union Berlin.
Yeah, and I did actually watch that all 90 minutes of it. It, as you said, it was predictable, but still kind of a surprise too when it happened. If you were thinking about it, it was predictable, but he hadn't played a lot, and a lot of people, of course, have, you know, catastrophized that to the point that he'll never play. Certainly, I think he had a bit of a setback with his little side trip to Paris. I think set him back a couple of weeks, because I think he was punished a bit for that. But nonetheless, obviously that is done. Look, he was Alba's backup. He was the backup. He's the backup left back. That is not the preferred position in Canada. Although, if you heard John Herdman in the fallout of the Canadian game, he mentioned the Canada-US game. He said that something interesting. This is a quick aside. That he thinks Davies will be a player that will play at left back for Canada when they are playing weaker opposition, because he feels that he can open them up a little bit more from back there. Against better opposition, he wants him further up the pitch to challenge him a bit more. And I thought that's a little bit of a interesting insight into John Herdman's use of Davies. So when they're playing the Cubas of the world, expect him at left back. When they're playing Mexico, expect him up top. So at any rate, but for Bayern in the immediate future, look, if you look at their wingers, he's always going to be in tough there for a couple more years. But if he can learn defensive responsibility from the defensive left back position, from a left back position, and still get into the attack, and he's not losing anything in the attack as a modern fullback, right? But you do need to learn some defensive skills in the game. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for him, because what I heard in the fallout of this game, not fallout, when the response reaction to his play, and I kind of ignored the North American reaction and just looked, you know, I was using Google Translate a lot. Let's just say that. And it was pretty, like, no one's glowing about it, but everyone was happy with it. And I think that's an important consideration. Like, you know, we want to believe that everything's all black and white, but in there, they're just looking at this kid as, is he a capable backup? And the answer was yes. He absolutely came in, and against the club at Union Berlin's size, which is, if you don't know, promoted to the Bundesliga for the first time in their history this year. He was able to come in there and play a role, do some things well. He was part of the buildup in one of Byron's two goals on the night. So he did that. He didn't have any defensive problems at all, and absolutely did his role perfectly in their mind, which will make them confident that they can use him in a similar role moving forward. And if he plays, you know, every third, fourth game for Bayern Munich, backing Elba up, allowing Elba to focus on, you know, the Champions League and bigger games in the Bundesliga, giving them that squad rotation, if he's a consistent rotated player in, then I think that that's progress as an 18 turning 19 year old.
Let's not forget.
And yeah.
Like if Alphonso Davies was a puppy, he's still in his socialization discovery period. Okay, I'm getting a puppy soon, so I'm reading a lot about puppies, so maybe this is why I'm saying this analogy. But he's still in the discovery zone. He's still in the discovery period. He's still socializing with his teammates, finding the best way for him to be effective. We have seen Davies. Like, I have seen Davies 2 weeks ago with my own eyes against world-class players one-on-one, not having a problem shaking them off and being a trouble for top-level defense, kind of, in the U.S. men's national team, right? So we know he can do that. That's not what he needs to learn and to grow at this point. But playing as a left back will give you some opportunities to go forward during the game, but it also gives you opportunities to learn how to be disciplined as a player, to learn to hold your line, to learn to look at your teammate, to set yourself up positionally, to keep that idea that you have a job to do on top of getting an opportunity to going forward if you do so. Both can happen simultaneously, and that's what he's learning now under Kovac with Bayern Munich playing as a left back, is the discipline and the mentality of being part of more than just a free electron up top when he's with Canada, but more being part of a defense backline, being part of a midfield, or being part of a system that is relying you to do what you need to do, but not step out of your boundaries.
No, I mean, precisely. We know that he can beat men, even world-class defenders, one-on-one in the dribble. And he's, you know, look at his FIFA ranking on speed. No problems there.
No, that's true.
So, yeah, he's got all that going for him already. But, you know, to be a fully polished top 10 club in the world regular starter is still a couple of years away. But if he can get there, that will make him, you know, aside from the unspoken, the only Canadian to ever get there. I made a promise to someone on the weekend that I would stop mentioning the unspoken player's name, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. It starts with an O, and oh yeah. Let's move on. Let's finish to talk about the league. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, let's move on. It would be, if he can become a regular starter, then it would be an historic figure for not just Canadians, but for North Americans, right? To get to that level, there have not been a lot of Americans either that have, or even Mexicans that started at the very highest level.
Well, so, you have Chucky Lozano right now. And another American that made his first splash in the Premier League last weekend for Chelsea is a certain player that was put in Davy's pocket 2 weeks ago. Talking about Christian Pulisic, who scored a hattie. He scored three for my Chelsea in a 4-2 win on the road against Burnley. Sean Dyche did not have a good Saturday afternoon, and Chelsea scored four. Pulisic scored three, Dwayne.
And yeah, a perfect hat trick, too. Similar issues to
a perfect hattie.
I was going to say. At the world-class level.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm getting a bit of an echo, so I apologize for that. But I mean, he needs to develop his game further, but it's certainly a shot of confidence for someone who has struggled to get on the field, and it's hard to ignore moving forward for success there. But Chelsea's the big story to me in a lot of ways this year. I mean, we haven't talked about them a lot because I think going into the season, we wondered what they would be like without the ability to replace Hazard, basically. You know, that put further pressure on Pulisic because he was the only player of name that they brought in, and that, of course, was from a previous transfer window and was not a direct replacement by any means.
And also Champions League, which they didn't have last year. They had Europa League, of course, and they won it. That's why they had the Champions League this year. But you're finding Chelsea with a depth that is not similar to the other Premier League teams, but still fourth right now and equal, close, well, in the battle for second, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, certainly Leicester, Chelsea, City are all sort of in a cluster there. City only 2 points up on the rest with, you know, 6 points back of Liverpool, which with their 2-1 win against Spurs, certainly, you know, showing that they have the determination that makes them a heavy favorite to finish this out at this point. But Chelsea, to me, is a huge story, as I said, because we didn't expect much from them, but they're right in there, certainly, to solidify that Champions League spot, which is a big deal, because if they can survive the transfer ban and be able to move forward after developing and giving these young kids an opportunity to play. And this has always been the thing with Chelsea. They used to joke, the Chelsea lone army, right? Well, they kind of have to lean on these guys. They can't loan them out now. They're forced to hashtag play their kids, and the play their kids is working for them.
Yep.
So
Batshuayi finally get his chance after years of loaned out to different teams, and Tammy Abraham, Mason Mount, the beginning of the season. Tomori, the non-Canadian, non-Senegal, but finally chose to play for England. Well, did he actually play? I don't think so, right? I don't think he got the cap yet.
He's Nigerian, by the way. He's the other team, Nigerian, by the way. But all these guys are young players that are getting an opportunity to play. And that's a big story, I think, across world football right now, is that you are seeing a lot of younger players get, you know, if they're good enough, they're old enough. If they're old enough, they're good enough. Which way do you say that? Anyway, if they're good enough, they're old enough. That's what I'm trying to say. Yes. Yeah, and you're seeing a lot more of that now, and that's a benefit, as you know, there's kind of a generational shift that's happening in a lot of ways, you know, and it's going to be even more exemplified in a couple of years when the two big boys start to move towards the end of their career. case you're not aware of who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi here. Okay. So we are getting at the end of that era, right? And a lot of these younger players are emerging, and we're getting new superstars coming through. And it's funny how it works in cycles. Like it really is kind of like you see a lot of these players that are from that generation kind of coming at the end at the same time, and these young players have to come in and we find the next generation. The world continues.
The world continues, but it'll never be the same. It's like when Pelé and Maradona retired. There was a gap there. There was a generation of superstars, and I guess we'll see other generations of superstars coming in to the spotlight in the world of soccer. But until then, Dwayne and I will recover and prepare for tomorrow's show, previewing Major League Soccer and its playoffs, conference finals tomorrow. Dwayne, are you starting to be excited?
I am a little bit. Yeah, they've decided in Toronto here, if it would be Toronto-centric for a second, they're going to let supporters into the stadium to watch the game on the big screen in the 18-yard box, because the field is now done for the year. So because the Argos played their final game on the weekend, there's no reason to keep it up and going now. So they're going to let us tromp on the field if you want. There's another big event at the Ontario Center, the big IMAX screen there. So you can watch Michael Bradley 100 feet tall if you wish.
I'm going to stay home.
Richie Larea was at the Leafs game, got a standing ovation. So there's a lot of excitement in Toronto.
They knew who he was? I'm surprised. Yeah. Jeez. Well,
they did put the Chiron there, so that helped. But
Things are changing, but not that much. The Leafs crowd, let's just put it this way, is a different crowd than the Raptors and TFC, which are very similar, if you know what I mean.
There's a little more Oakville in the Leafs crowd than there is in a TFC crowd, yes. Although there's Oakville fans at TFC, that's clear.
Don't blame Oakville. Anyways, on that note, Dwayne and I will recover and talk about the playoffs tomorrow and preview the conference finals that are coming. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter at SoccerTodaySPN, at 24th Minute for Dwayne, and at Kev Laramie for myself. Make sure you check out our website, sportspodcastingnetwork.com, for archives and also articles of Dwayne and myself over the last few weeks. And make sure you subscribe to our podcast on any podcatchers you have, or also on YouTube. You're watching on YouTube right now. Click that subscribe button right here. Click that follow button on Twitter and like our Facebook page. That's a lapsus if I have it. That's a Freudian slip. Until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.